Psalm 85 is written in view of the fact that Israel, as a nation, has blown it again and needed God to bail her out again. And Israel had obviously experienced some setback as a nation because of their foolish choices, and once again she needed God to bail her out. Israel would blow it time and time again, and then God would come to her rescue and get her out of it, and then she would turn around and do the same thing again, and the process start all over. We can all relate to this psalm because we've all been there. Who of us has not been miserable a time or two because of our choices and seen God demonstrate his grace to us and start blessing us, and then we fall into that same trap that made us miserable in the first place? It's interesting that this is a psalm of the sons of Korah. Korah was the one who led an uprising against Moses, and God executed him and his family. God had permitted some of his sons to exist, and as a result, they experienced their own setbacks, and they needed God's help. So this is written by a family that knows what it's like to let God down and then turn to God for help. When God's people know they've done something to anger God, they need to go to God in prayer and truthfully admit it and ask for his grace and for purpose to conform their lives to this righteous ways, and they will experience his mercy and peace. Carefully notice that this psalm is written for the choir director. So not only was it to be taught, but it's to be sung. It's a masterpiece of a psalm in seeing the forgiveness of God when we've blown it. The writer reminds God what God's grace had done in the past. Look at verses 1 through 3 of Psalm 85. Lord, you were favorable to your land. You restored the fortunes of Jacob. You forgave the iniquity of your people. You covered all their sin. Selah. You withdrew all your wrath. You turned from your hot anger. These verses, the writer cries out to God for help, and in doing so, remembers what God had done in the past in similar situations. Now, not only is it to be remembering himself, but he's also reminding God of these realities. It's an amazing package of grace forgiveness that features these realities. God had favored his people. It's the epitome of grace owned, where God shows favor to his people in their land when they did not deserve it. And then God had restored his people. God restored his people to a relationship with himself when they had blown it. And God had forgiven his people. God forgave their iniquity, which refers to their perverse, depraved sin. Notice the verse says God covered all their sin. Selah says stop and just think about that for a moment. And then God had withdrawn his anger toward his people. Actually, to have forgiveness of sin, God must withdraw his anger and wrath. The reason why these things are brought up is because God needed to do this one more time. Obviously, Israel had blown it again, and she needed God to once again demonstrate his grace. The fact is, if God forgave us the worst state of sin as an unbeliever, can he not forgive us in our worst slip-ups as a believer? It's very right when you've blown it to go to God and ask him to remember his amazing package of grace. God can only favor those he's forgiven. Can only favor those whose sins are gone. This is what forgiveness brings us. Then the writer asks God for his grace in the present. Look at verses 4 through 7. Restore us again, O God of our salvation. Put away your indignation toward us. Will you be angry with us forever? Will you prolong your anger to all generations? Will you not revive us again, that your people may rejoice in you? Show us your steadfast love, O Lord, and grant us your salvation. You're reminding God of these things he's done in the past. The writer brings it into the present. It's obvious that people need the same forgiving grace in the present time. He asked God for his restoration. Well, it's this contextual point. Being restored into a right relationship with God is not contingent upon our wishes or will. It's contingent upon the action of God. God must do this work. Obviously, one of the things we must do is ask him for it. And then he asked God for removal of his indignation. It's one thing to have people angry with us because they are not right with God. It's another thing to have God angry because we are not right with Him. And then we ask God for His revival. Notice joy is found in being right with God. When the relationship with God has been revived, there's great joy. Notice that adverb, again. What this means is that it's happened before. This was not the first time a revival was needed. Joy comes to being revived in our relationship with God. Then he asked God for his mercy. The psalmist asked God to show the people his mercy. There's times when we need to pray prayers like this. He asked God for his salvation. Let's not overlook the theology of this verse, because it's clearly teaching that salvation is a grant from God. Salvation is a grace grant from God. Salvation or deliverance here is a deliverance from the negative things God was permitting to happen as a result of sin. We see that the writer acknowledges that he will listen to what God says. Look at verse 8. Let me hear what God, the Lord, will speak. For he will speak peace to his people, to his saints, but let them not turn back to folly. Surely his salvation is near to those who fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. Steadfast love and faithfulness meet, righteousness and peace kiss each other. Faithfulness springs up from the ground, and righteousness looks down from the sky. Verse 8 is important to our lives. I will hear what God the Lord will say. Here's the main problem with most people. They do not want to hear what God has to say to them. The only way to experience God's grace and peace is to listen to the Word of God. Godly people want to hear the Word of God because they want God to speak to them. Hearing the Word of God is a critical key to peace. Now, if one is to have a peaceful relationship with God, one must be willing to hear the Word of God, specifically make these applications. If one is to have a peaceful relationship with God, one cannot turn back to folly. Those who are backslidden need to carefully consider what is said here. This verse should console, but it should also warn. If you turn back to your folly, once God has delivered you, things will be, as one commentator says, 7 times worse. If one is to have a peaceful relationship with God, one must fear God. Those who are right with God have a deep reverence for God. And if one is to have a peaceful relationship with God, one must realize that there is an intimate connection between mercy and truth. In a true relationship with God, there will always be harmony between grace, mercy, love, and truth. God's love is based on truth. God's grace is based on truth. God's mercy is based on truth. Try to cover or color truth, and there will never be a peaceful relationship with God. And if one is to have a peaceful relationship with God, one must realize there is an intimate connection between righteousness and peace. The key to having peace in the soul is to have righteousness in life. And if one is to have a peaceful relationship with God, one must realize truth must be admitted on earth because righteousness looks down from heaven. Notice again the emphasis on truth. If one is to have a relationship with God in the aftermath of failure, there must be a truthful assessment of sin and truthful confession of that sin. What that means is one who wants a peaceful relationship with God must admit he's a sinner and is desiring a relationship with the holy, righteous God. And the writer believes what God will do in the future. Look at verses 12 and 13. Yes, the Lord will give what is good, and our land will yield its increase. Righteousness will go before him and make his footsteps a way. God will eventually bring total peace to the land of Israel. The psalmist was completely confident that God would in fact deliver. God will give what is good. Now the good that's being referred to here is the restoration of the relationship. It's absolutely true that when one is right with God, one realizes all good things come from God, not themselves and not luck. However, the best good that God can give is a healthy relationship with himself. God will cause the land to yield produce. Look carefully at what is being said here, and it's going to be true in the kingdom. God will have righteousness before him. It not only has an application of what will exist in his kingdom, total righteousness, but it also has to do with those who will have complete access to him. In that reign, God will make his ways everyone's ways. Just imagine a time when God will cause all people in the world to walk his ways. This would be amazing. So if you've blown it, remember God has forgiven some of the past, the very sin you have committed in the present. If you've blown it, go to God and admit truth. And after you've gone to God and confessed sin, turn from it and walk in his righteous ways.